Right. How nice to see you all here. And now I've got two helpers. Super thrilled about that, Pauline and Tina, who's looking after the onliners, the Zoomers. So welcome the Zoomers as well. This is the first class in the foundation course, which has been a couple of years since we've actually led this course. Beginner-friendly course, one where you can ask lots of questions. It all started because of questions from people. That's how I put the course together. I mean, is this you? If you relate to Buddhism but don't quite know where to start, read a few books, but I mean, there's so many books available now. Which direction do we investigate in? Or just simply trying to make sense of the world? Often contradictory, often traumatic. Or seeking like-minded people. I mean, all of these reasons come up again and again for coming to a course like this. And because Buddhism is both local and global. So what we do, it affects the whole world. What happens in the world affects us, but we don't have to feel powerless actually by ourselves becoming good human beings. It's going to have a positive effect on the world. So if we want a kinder, more tolerant world, then we can start with ourselves and radiate it out from there. You don't have to be a Buddhist to come to this course. I was thinking, like, for instance, my father, who if he was going to be anything, he'd be a Buddhist, but he's not an anything. He's like keeping that space there, but kind of Buddhist curious, I suppose. I'm going to start with a really big question and then we can take it from there. We can do a little meditation and set our motivation. So, the big question, the meaning of life. And there is the Monty Python answer, but it doesn't sustain us, does it? That's 42, that's right, that's right. But if you're not into maths, this could be a little obtuse. So what are we here for? And actually, one time when His Holiness was traveling through America, and it must have been way back in the olden days where he was less famous, and they stopped somewhere where they were having refreshments together, and a waitress came up to His Holiness and said, "Your Holiness, I really wanted to ask you this, what's the meaning of life?" And everybody at the table's like, "Oh my gosh, he's delivering the coffee. How's he going to answer this?" And so what he said was, "The purpose of life is to be happy and to be useful." There it is. How extraordinary. And that's really what Buddhism is about, and what this course is about, of how to become happier. Not like happy-go-lucky, but sustainable inner peace and happiness. It's what we all want, from the smallest, tiniest creature to the most intelligent human being. We spend our whole life trying to be happy. Huge amount of effort, not necessarily a good return on it. It's not because there's anything wrong with us, it's just because we don't quite know where to look, how to actually achieve this happiness. And ultimately, Buddhism is about finding lasting happiness. So, the happiness that doesn't run out is one way of putting it. Corey Jackson said that one to me the other day. So, it's about becoming happier. This course also is about finding meaning. How to bring a sense of worth to our life and to ourselves, finding meaning in our life. Because the meaning isn't out there. The meaning, of course, is what we bring to it. But how can we do that genuinely? And of course, it's about helping others as well, because one of the most satisfying things that we can do is when we help others, when we actually are able to make a positive effect on someone's life, even if it's just an animal, just getting a rescue animal, and changing the course of somebody's life. So in this course, what we're going to look at are really basic Buddhist principles. What makes you a Buddhist? What actually is a Buddhist? What meditation's all about? We're going to talk about rebirth and the arguments for, the arguments against, because it's not about trying to get a whole new belief system, but actually to work it out for ourselves. So this is a forum where we can work it out for ourselves. We'll have a talk about death and what happens at death time, which Tina was just telling me before the class, when she first did this course, that was the class that she came in on. And then also the really unique Buddhist topics of emptiness and bodhicitta. So this is the unique Buddhist worldview that's quite different from any other kind of religion and makes it more of a science or a psychology. Also, as well, we're going to look at how we can actually practice this in our life. So it's not just theory, it's about how do we apply it in our day-to-day lives. And what kind of habits do we need to be able to support it? And then it'll become a structure for any future study. Because one of the Discovering Buddhism students, which is the in-depth class, was saying to me, as he's been going through Discovering Buddhism, which is about a 3-year course, he's like, "Oh yeah, Miffy covered that in that course. Oh yeah, Miffy covered that." I'm like, "Yeah, I did." So it may all be kind of overwhelming, but it's okay. What we're doing is building this structure for a worldview. Here's another quote from His Holiness: "World peace through inner peace, and inner peace through helping others." And this really is another of those amazing formulas from His Holiness. And quite pertinent because, how can you create peace when you go to war? It's just contradiction of terms, isn't it? How can you be an activist to help save people if your mind is agitated and disturbed? Let's just have some introductions and see. Yeah, actually, because that's quite different from when we first started, where there wasn't hardly any books translated or anything. Now it really is information overload. Where do I go? So hope it's going to be just the ticket. Thank you, Amy. Yeah, right. So again, something to get your teeth into, and I know that feeling of sitting there and almost getting very self-conscious in your life of going, and yeah. And over here, Tina, as you will hear as we go through the course, I've kind of got a checkered background. So I was brought up a Buddhist, so it's definitely my first language, my automatic kind of go-to. That worldview is very much something comfortable for me, and I only really noticed that when I went overseas to Europe and discovered that just about everyone in Europe believes in God. And it was really weird to have that experience. And I started wondering, wow, what would it be like to believe in God? And so then I started thinking, oh, I'm Buddhist on the inside without kind of knowing that I was. Doesn't necessarily mean I was a good Buddhist, right? So I've been a very, very bad Buddhist. And so big winding road, and certainly came, even though I was brought up with Buddhism, I've come to Buddhism through questioning and debating and reasoning. And one of the things that the lamas really encourage is lots and lots of questioning. And that was something that I really liked, to have the confidence to be able to question things. So yeah, before I was here, I've been here about, I don't know, 28, 29 years now as the program coordinator and leading classes. Before that, I made circus costumes. Is there much difference between circuses and Buddhist centers and the world? Not really. Set me a good stead. Yes, if you've got questions, so also for the online people, if you have any questions, then please put them into the chat and Tina will ask on your behalf. Yes, so Luke, you'll find that there's going to be similarities and there's going to be coming at the same kind of practices and techniques, but from a different angle. So it'd be really interesting to see how that sits with you. So today we're going to have a look at the essence of the Buddha's teaching. So what actually is Buddhism about? What makes you a Buddhist? What is a Buddhist? We're going to look at what are called the three jewels of refuge, and also what actually is refuge, seeking refuge. So like you were saying about haven't really found something to get your teeth into yet. In a way, that's like, well, where is the refuge? And then we're going to have a look at how big our goal can be, like what's it for, and are we unwittingly putting limits on our goal for our life, our short, precious, limited life? Let's just do a short reflection to set our motivation. So take a nice deep breath and settle into your seat. Feel nice and grounded and supported by your seat. Straighten your spine a little bit so that you feel alert. Bring your focus inwards. Just anchor your attention on the breath. And just as your body is settled while the rest of the world goes on around us, then so too our mind can become settled. All the other kind of thoughts or distractions, just leave them on the periphery. And while you're just gently resting your focus on the breath, bring to mind the reasons that brought you here tonight. How we already have similarities with what the other people in the class have said. And even if the details are slightly different, fundamentally, we are all looking for meaning to make our life worthwhile. We are, without even consciously having to do it, striving for happiness. So let's set our motivation that not only can we bring our own peace of mind and happiness, but that may we be able to expand it out so that everyone we come into contact with, we can share that peacefulness. That our interactions will be kind and meaningful. And that we can bring the biggest possible benefit to ourselves and all living beings, starting right here. And so, with this motivation, let's dive right in. To what is a Buddhist? So I put this in because one of our students, she went and saw her grandma who was living in old people's home, and her grandma said, "So, what is a Buddhist? What's the point of a Buddhist?" And she was like, "Huh? What do you reckon? What is a Buddhist?"
Inner person.
Inner person. Well done. That's right. I mean, we kind of got an idea what a Buddhist is. It might be someone who ascribes to an organized religion of a Buddhist, but actually, this is what a Buddhist is. This is a verse from the Buddha. Avoid harm, practice virtue, subdue your mind. This is the essence of the teachings of the Buddha. So you don't actually have to become a Buddhist or convert to anything or take on a alien set of beliefs or anything like that. But what we really do need to do is become, just like you said, Georgie, an inner being, someone who the practice is very first is harm minimization in everything that we do. Cease harming ourselves, cease harming others. And that's half the thing done. If all we did was just refrain from harm, the world would be a better place already, wouldn't it? Let alone practice virtue. So Refraining from harm means stopping doing all the things that cause us and others suffering. Practicing virtue means, actually, virtue means that we cultivate all of the causes for happiness in our mind. So if we want to be free, we've got to stop harming and start cultivating all of those good qualities. And how do we do that? By looking within, subduing our own mind. We can't do it by forcing everybody else to be nice to us, because there are how many billion people in the world? It's just not feasible. And someone's going to blow it, aren't they? And even if we had money and power, it still doesn't. You can't force your cat to come and give you a cuddle when it doesn't want to. Like, there are just some things you can't force. But the thing is, when we subdue our mind, it's to do with looking within, because even if the world is peaceful and the people are kind, if our own mind is agitated, we can't even see it. If we're driven by jealousy, we can't even enjoy the good things. So number one, we've got to look within, subdue our own mind. So this is the essence of the Buddhist teachings. It's not necessarily religion. It's not necessarily just a self-help kind of thing. It's very much to do with cause and effect. So the essence of the Buddhist teachings is about cause and effect as it happens in our own mind, our own heart. And just as if we ignore cause and effect in the external world, we can get into trouble. Anyone who's jumped off the garage roof dressed as Superman as a kitty quickly becomes aware of cause and effect. So you don't need to become a Buddhist, but you do need to become an inner being, whatever you become. And how we go along on the path is developing confidence based on reasoning and research. So this is about how we come to conclusions. So it's not about blind faith or hope. Blind faith or hopeful belief. Many times I hear people say, I really believe in this or I really believe in that. And it's just hope. It's just a really strong emotional hope, as if by hoping hard enough, it'll carry us through. And it can, until someone comes along and contradicts it, or until something happens in the world and your experience contradicts your belief, and then you lose your religion. If our religion or our practice is based on confidence of reasoning, checking with our own experience, it all makes sense, it stacks up, then we can go through the highs and lows, we'll still have that confidence. So questions, comments so far? How are we going? It's making sense. I mean, in this also comes the whole thing of asking questions and being willing to kind of go out on a limb. So I remember years ago I was asking Venerable Rabina, I was trying to figure out, where does Buddhism and feminism fit in together? You know, how come there's all these monks and there's hardly any nuns? And the really excellent thing was that I could ask the question, I didn't get in trouble. So that number one was, and then often when you do ask questions, the lamas will say, excellent question. It's like, phew. To really, I don't know if it's the Australian school system that makes people terrified of asking questions, or if it's a corporate thing that if you ask a question, it means you don't know anything. But really, this is how we're going to, it's like how we're really going to figure out how things work is by keeping on asking questions. And the more you ask, the clearer things will become. And so I would have rip-roaring debates with Venerable Rabina and some of the lamas, especially as a younger person, until I kind of figured it out. And sometimes it took me years to go through. Becoming a Buddhist is like finding a refuge. Refuge like from a storm, from the storms of life that come along. we turn for safety. So I read that in a war, when soldiers are dying or when they're hurt, there's two things that they cry out. They either cry out mother, mum, or they cry out for God, regardless of whether they believe in God or not, or regardless of whether their mother's alive or not. It's just this thing that in extremis, this is what we cry out for, our mother or, a higher power, someone bigger or better than us. And it's really deeply ingrained. It's not an intellectual thing. So we have this urge for refuge, to find safety. When we're a kitty, we run to mum, or we have a teddy, or we have something. We really seek a refuge. So there are causes. Normally, we seek refuge because we have problems. So, often people come to a Dharma center. It's not often, say, because everything is going fantastic in life, and now I think I'll go and learn to meditate. Usually, it's about problems. Problems have happened, and there's a real incentive to come. We don't want to suffer, and something is going wrong. And I certainly know that I do my practices much better when I have problems than when things are going right. I do really sincere prayers when I've got problems. So we have fear, we have a dread of continuing how we are, of this ordinary existence. So that's kind of that feeling where, is that all there is? Like, there's got to be more to it. It can't just all be suffering. The whole rat race around and around, but also just simply what to do when everything goes wrong. There's just genuine fear and trauma. And so that's kind of the obvious reason for taking refuge. But there's also inspirational faith. So fear and faith. If we turn for refuge to something, we've got to recognize that they can help us. So we had faith in our mum when we were a kid, but then there came a time when we lost our faith in our mother, and they either betrayed us, or they disappointed us, or rejected us or something, and suddenly it all came crashing down, how they're an ordinary person just like us. So what we take refuge in, we have to have some kind of inspiration to go, oh yes, this is worthy of it. This inspires me, gives me confidence that it's possible. So one of the first things that we take refuge in are friends, money. You can spend a lot of time accumulating money, property, whatever. Does it give us what we're seeking? There's also so when we take or look for a refuge, I know I spent a lot of time reading Western philosophy, reading Carl Jung, lots of psychology. I read Freud's psychoanalytical theory on neuroses when I was 13, and thought, oh, this is a crock. So at least my 13-year-old self had it together. We can get some kind of, and I did a lot of reading on feminism, and then I read a lot about circuses and freaks, and all of this like was putting pieces together, but it wasn't enough. It didn't make enough sense. And I just wasn't convinced. So I found, coming back to Buddhism, kind of on my own terms, things started making sense, that I would always refer back to a Buddhist lot of kind of references when I was reading Western psychology, or when I was reading pop science. I go, oh yeah, that makes sense with the Buddhist thing over here. So we have some kind of inspirational faith. There is also an uncommon refuge, which is the wish to help others. Where, say, if you have someone who's suffering illness, who's in palliative care or has depression, and you want to be able to help them, and you find yourself helpless, you don't know, you have this wish to help, and you don't know how to do it. What are the tools and skills that I need? So that's also where we need a refuge. There's a huge incentive for us. We may not do it for ourselves, but for our loved ones, we will do anything. So the wish to help others, people do make enormous sacrifices to help their society, their country, to build a better world that now we enjoy. So, how do we find a valid refuge? We've got to investigate, number one, and using reasoning, not just hoping and not just falling for the slick publicity or the that sounds nice or whatever. So, I look at all the ads about influencers and I'm thinking, so why do people even listen to these people? Just because they're there and they're pretty and they talk fast and for a short amount of time. And there it is. Just add a bit of sparkle, and oh my gosh, what happens if you take your health advice from an influencer? We know the answer to that. So, being able to use our reasoning is a skill that we're not necessarily taught how to do, to question things and reason things through, even if we want a particular answer. So, we've got to check with our own experience as well. So, is it logical, reasonable? Then check. If I do that, do I get the same result? Check. Don't second guess or gaslight yourself. Really check against, does it accord with what happened in your own life? And then you end up with confidence. And so then someone can come at you and pull down your reasoning, and you're confident to look at it again to see, oh, maybe their reasoning wasn't right. It also means that when things go wrong in life, like sometimes people come here and then after a few months, everything starts going wrong. And then they go, oh, this Buddhism thing, it's no good because everything started going wrong in my life. So, just because it happened at the same time. So we've really got to be able to use our reasoning and our experience and put it together. So this leads us to the question of, well, actually, what do we seek refuge in at the moment? And many of the things that we seek refuge in, we probably haven't investigated. We haven't reasoned. It's just kind of default autopilot. It could even be something as simple as sleep or eating, boredom eating, all of these kinds of things. They're all sorts of refuges that we already have, but we're not necessarily conscious about. So any questions before we do a short reflection? How are we going? So I think you've just kind of just about said it because you have the confidence. One is it's in your heart, so you have this wish to help others. But also what you've got to have is a really clear system. Because the wish to help others, it's not enough. We need it to sustain us through how difficult others can be. But we need to have it really clear in our mind through the reasoning, through being able to bring it back to consciousness. I remember when my friends would say, it's all right, it's going to be okay. And I'd go, how do you know? Just because I want it to be okay isn't going to make me feel it's going to be okay. I need to be convinced. So let's do this reflection, short reflection. So again, begin by letting your body settle. Release a little of the day's momentum. Notice the breath as a steady companion, inviting the mind to settle. And set an altruistic motivation. May this practice support your well-being and through you benefit others. So, seeking refuge means turning towards sources of wisdom, compassion and clarity when life feels uncertain. When we take refuge in these inner qualities, they protect our mind and help us navigate challenges with less fear. With a valid refuge, our mind is sheltered from the common sufferings of the human condition, the highs and lows, uncertainties, loneliness, dissatisfaction, and physical challenges. They're experiences we all share. When we rely on these inner qualities, wisdom, compassion, and clarity, they offer stability even when outer circumstances shift. It's like possessing a protective umbrella to shelter under during life's sudden storms. So, what do you notice when you recall a time you sought refuge due to fear or dread? Perhaps you sense how natural it is to reach for safety, just as an umbrella shelters you from hail and rain. How does it feel to remember a moment when you sought refuge with confidence? You may recognize a quiet strength already present within you. Just as having an umbrella lets you continue on your journey well protected. And what arises when you think of a time when you sought refuge to help others? Often a warm clarity appears, showing our wish to care is also a refuge. Just as an umbrella protects not only you, but someone walking beside you. So, with this understanding, gently determine to look within your own mind for steadiness, happiness, peace of mind. And carry this as an inner support with you into the rest of the day. And then you can gently bring your focus back to the room. So let's have a look now at what a valid refuge is. So we've been talking about refuge. We have different kind of automatic things that we go for refuge. I know I've got my whole system of when I'm bored or dissatisfied, I'll go, oh, I'll just have a look online, or oh, I'll see what's on at the movies, or I'll go and eat the sweet thing in the fridge, or I'll play with the cat, or all of these various things to just kind of avoid looking within. And all of these things, of course, fall down after a little while. They don't last. So, how can we tell if something is worth putting our trust in. So there are four qualities of a valid refuge that we can use. It's like the ultimate checklist. And I thought actually we can use these to determine actually even what political party we follow, or if you're trying to find a good therapist. This is a checklist for that as well. It's for ordinary worldly things. Even what football team to follow, who to trust on the internet. This is the checklist that we need. So often journalists will say, follow the money. This is a little bit more nuanced than that. I mean, follow the money is good because it really reveals hidden agendas and the actions rather than just what people say. But what we put our trust in. So the first two, that they're free of all fears and they have the means to free others. So being free of all fears means that they themselves have freed themselves from fear, from the fears of ordinariness, of cyclic existence. So it's, we can think of it, say, for instance, if you're going to the doctor, would you go to a doctor who's sick? Or if you're going to a therapist, a marriage counsellor, would you go to a marriage counsellor who's going through a divorce? Or if you're trying to tidy your house and conquer hoarding, would you go and talk to a fellow hoarder? Or would you go and talk to someone who's actually been able to organize their house? So this is the thing, just wanting to help somebody isn't enough. You have to actually have freed yourself from the problem. So whoever we are putting our faith in, our trust in, for the meaning of our life, they must have discovered the meaning of life. To overcome our disturbing emotions, they must have overcome their disturbing emotions. Nothing less. We wouldn't expect it for ordinary things, let alone for life and death things like a spiritual path. And even our closest family members, our best friends, might want to help us with all their heart, but can they? So they themselves have to kind of walk the talk. That's the first one. They have to have the means to free others. So not only are they liberated, but they must have a method that works. So what I find in Western psychology, that there are lots of methods that work, but they don't necessarily lead to liberation. It's like we've got number two, but not number one. But you can use a lot of these self-help books, a lot of Jungian psychology, a lot of kind of CBT and all those kind of neuropsychology kind of things. You can use because the methods are really good. What I found is the methods don't go far enough. They just kind of help you be an ordinary person and stick with the problems that aren't too bad. You know, and also they may have some kind of mistakes. Like, for instance, anger is natural and therefore we can't do anything about it. So big mistakes, big assumptions in there. Lots of self-help things are really good for overcoming anger, but doesn't go far enough. So I think you need to have both a method and actually, number one, be free of the problems that we're seeking to be free of. So right there, we can look at a whole lot of influencers and all various types of charlatans and go, oh, yeah, a lot of kind of cults and kind of weird groups get together where there's great sincerity in the beginning, but they don't have a method and they're not free of problems. So then it might last for a while, but then it all turns to catastrophe, and that's why. There's two other ones. So one, they have great compassion for all, whether they're close to them or not, personally close or not. So that's how they feel about others. So not biased. And they aim to help everybody. So how they act. So a Buddhist would aim to help Buddhists as well as non-Buddhists. would help aim to help good people and bad people, you know, pleasant people to be with and really difficult, obnoxious people. People that are helpful, people that are harmful. So this one is really quite challenging. So the number three, compassion for all, whether close or not. So compassion, of course, we care for those that we know and love, people in our own family, our own pets. So a while ago, I got a new cat, and I noticed how it takes a while before you get close. So at first it's just a weird cat. Now we're friends, we're really affectionate. And so I was noticing how that went, and it's just through exposure. So you can extrapolate this out and think, well, if I spent time with every single living being like I did with my cat, I would naturally become close to them. So why aren't I now? I may as well just take that step already. So someone who we can put our trust and faith in, you know, the Buddha aimed to help everybody, not just his family, not just his people, all people. Not just the chosen people or the special ones, and everybody else doesn't matter about them. It's everybody. So if there's a group of people left out, this should be a red flag for us. Whether it's a group of people due to age, gender or money. If you don't have enough money, you can't come in. You know, all of this should be a red flag for us that it's biased. Or when we seek to, for instance, create peace for my country, but not your country, how is that ever going to work? So regardless of personal relationships and this is what we expect with professionals, isn't it? We expect doctors, anyone at a hospital, to care for whoever comes in that door, regardless whether they're poor, whether they're rich, whether they're being really obnoxious because they're off their face having a psychotic episode, or whether they're a model patient. None of that's supposed to make any difference. And we expect it of our first responders, don't we? So when we are looking for a refuge, this is what we should be looking for. And so the fourth one really is about what matters is our practice, not how much money we have, not how good a student we are, but what matters to our refuge is whether we practice or not. That's the main thing. So I notice how when the lamas teach, you know, Geshe Sherab was here recently, and also Geshe Zopa, and how they have great affection for everyone in the class, regardless of what kind of questions people ask, regardless if this person asks a question and then the very next question is the same one from this person over here because they kind of got distracted and didn't hear it. All the time, it's just like really seeking for the benefit of the group. And I mean, the Geshes that come, they're incredibly well educated, and they just talk about the basics again and again with equal enthusiasm each time. Such care for us. So, do you find this useful? Do you think you could apply this? I mean, to other things in your life? Yeah, a being or a philosophy, because a philosophy comes from somebody. And also, even if we think, oh, well, science isn't a being, but science comes from scientists and is molded by the society, whether it was when everybody still believed in God, whether it was when people separated out God and the physical world, whether it's after the wars and it's like God is dead. It still comes from human beings, doesn't it? I mean, we think science is objective, as if that's just like our white Western arrogance, isn't it? It all comes through the filter of our culture and education. And there's so many other ways to present similar information. And even with science, I mean, we can have an incredibly developed scientific, process in the West, and yet, what have we invented? Climate change. So there's right there, we can see why, because all of our development forgot about what happens to the rubbish and the pollution. So there was a bias there. It wasn't a holistic thing of caring for the entire environment. It was like the world is limitless. We can just dump our rubbish, it won't matter. So even with that, I find it's a really interesting checklist that if whatever we put our faith in, if it doesn't encompass the welfare of everybody, sooner or later down the track, we're going to get into trouble.
Narrows it down, sure, we could put
Oh, it
that.
really does. Yeah. And so then, if we want to become enlightened, if we want to become free of suffering, if we want to make the very most of our life, then we need to look to someone who's been able to do that. And so then we can check up, well, did the Buddha do that? But even with ordinary things, if we want to learn how to drive a car, number one, we want to learn off someone who can drive. So you don't want to learn off me. I read about driving, and I read about traffic and traffic calming and all sorts of things, and the invention of cars, and I love heavy machinery, but I can't drive. So hey, I've got lots of study in this. Would you trust me to teach you to drive? Would you even want me on the road? No.
Not good traffic.
And then they've got to have the means to free others from fear. So if you're going to learn to drive, did anyone learn to drive from their parents? And how many arguments did you have?
Smashed into
Smashed into a wall.
a
So you want to be able to have someone that has a really good method to teach you, not just who loses their mind the first time you get behind the wheel. So yeah, it does narrow it down. And but if we hold people to this standard, we'll know who we can put our trust in. But again, someone who might be a very good driving instructor and teach you how to drive, would you ask them to teach you how to cook? Not necessarily. So just because we trust somebody for one thing doesn't mean we trust them for all things. If we do find a valid refuge, there's incredible benefits. So one of them, we stop being distracted. How many times have I just gone through a day and got to like 3 o'clock in the afternoon and gone, what have I done today? Because I hadn't made it clear to myself what I was doing. I hadn't taken refuge. So once we know what we're doing and we've committed to a path, and we're confident because we checked it out, distractions will melt away. So instead of just trying to like not be so distracted, that's kind of the back to front way of doing it. How to not be distracted is to have a really sure path. So we naturally stop being distracted. Our path through life becomes clear. We know what to do, we know where to put our energy. Even if outwardly all we're doing is being a cleaner, doesn't matter. How we be a cleaner becomes clear. We become a better human being, safer to be with, pleasant to be with, and hopefully useful to be with. And we are naturally protected from suffering. So when we have a refuge, even when things go wrong in our life, we won't suffer that angst, that uncertainty and confusion. And we'll be able to actually turn those things to something useful. So the last few years for many of us have been really quite difficult. The COVID era brought so many things up to the surface, didn't it? And I mean, for me, while it's been really, really hard, it's been incredibly productive. So even when things go wrong, our mind can be protected from that really deep distress. Also, we know we're on the right track when we stop overly concentrating on the faults of others and start looking within. So I just kind of put this in. This is another kind of red flag that if we start being disappointed in others or pointing out the faults of others as the first thing that we do, we're in trouble. And it's also going to really bring us down. What we find when we have refuge is that we stop expecting everybody else to be acting like a Buddha. Okay, let's do another little reflection. So again, just settling into your seat, letting your breath lengthen. And quietly letting an intention to benefit both yourself and others arise like a warm, steady light in your heart. As we're understanding, a valid refuge is something that is stable, compassionate, wise, and capable of guiding us beyond confusion. So when we rely on what is unsteady, like our habits, our impulses, other people's approval of us, we find ourselves continually disappointed. It's like leaning on a fence that looks sturdy until the moment you really need it. So what usually draws you toward your default refuge when you feel fear or uncertainty? Just as a driving instructor might notice a student clutching the wheel really tight, you might sense your own habits tightening. How reliable have your default refuges proven to be over time? But a driving instructor's calm guidance shows how steadiness can redirect even a shaky start. Do the people or comforts you turn to meet all four qualities of a refuge that can genuinely free you from confusion? The driving instructor who is skilled, patient, and consistent reflects the power of a reliable guide. So with this understanding, invite yourself to seek refuges that are steady, that are wise and compassionate and unbiased. And rest in the understanding that choosing a reliable refuge is an act of clarity, not criticism. An act of care for oneself and compassion for others. And you can again bring your focus back to the room. So let's look at the Buddhist refuge. So in the The Buddhist path, there are what's called three jewels of refuge. So in Buddhism, devotion is associated with refuge, the first step on the path to liberation and awakening. Refuge is the attitude of relying upon or turning to something for guidance and help. In an ordinary sense, we take refuge in friends for love and security, in food and entertainment when we're hungry or bored, and so forth. But such external sources of refuge can satisfy only our needs only temporarily, because they, as well as the happiness they bring, are impermanent and unreliable. Buddhist refuge, on the other hand, involves discovering and utilizing the unlimited potential that lies within each of us. There are two aspects of refuge, outer and inner. Outer refuge is appreciating and relying upon the three jewels, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. So we can go through what these, this is from How to Meditate by Kathleen McDonald, which is an awesome workbook. So the Buddha jewel, the Buddha, the founder, the guide, the role model. So for instance, Shakyamuni Buddha, but there have been many Buddhas, not just one. So normally the outer Buddha is who we think of as the historical Buddha, Shakyamuni. So Shakyamuni demonstrated how you can be a human being and you can become enlightened, so that we would get the confidence to go, well, if he did it, I can do it. He was a human being, I'm a human being, it's possible. And there are so many similarities between our life and the life of the Buddhas. All the questions, what is the meaning of life? You know, he asked all of those questions. He had so many things, everything right in the palace, and yet this feeling like, is that it? And then had the courage to really go out on a limb and question it. So what a Buddha is, though, is someone who has perfect wisdom, perfect compassion, and perfect ability. So when you think of it like that, there's the historical Buddha, but there have been many, many Buddhas. And if we think of it like this, what if we slowly developed our wisdom more and more and more, just a little bit more each day without stopping, developed our compassion more and more, whittled away all of our delusions, developed all of our skills? If we did that to its utmost, that's what a Buddha is. It's not some kind of foreign thing that we abracadabra turn into. It's actually, if we lived up to our potential, that's what a Buddha is. A fully awakened Buddha is omniscient, meaning they know past, present, and future. They know our mind. They know our deepest heart. They fully see us and recognize us. I mean, and that's really amazing, because so many times what matters most to us is that we're seen and heard, isn't it? Not that people even fix a problem, but they just genuinely recognize us as another living being. And because a Buddha has developed all of these qualities and the skills to be able to help others, they effortlessly and spontaneously and perfectly help others. So they don't ever have to say, oh, I don't know, what do I say here? Spontaneously, without any effort, the most perfect thing comes out. So the outer Buddha leads us to the inner Buddha, which is our own potential. Seed within every living being for enlightenment. So Venerable Rabina had this wonderful way of putting it, where she would say, it's just like if you take an acorn, you can turn it into an earring. You can use it as a weapon. But what its potential is extraordinary, something you'd never think of. And then she even went so far, it's not like there's a little mini oak tree inside the acorn, a mini me in there. It's just the potential. It's got to go through the process. You can't go acorn, oak tree. Ta-da! It's got to go through this process. It's got to have all the conducive conditions, be nourished, nurtured. And if it's not, it's stunted or it doesn't grow. But the potential is there. It's fantastic, isn't it? So in a way, it's like it's a birthright. It's a birthright of every living being. And we find ourselves in the most perfect situation to bring it to fruition. So here's a little description about the Buddhas, which will blow your mind. The Buddhas have infinite, impartial compassion for all beings, so we can be assured of their continual help. Buddhas aren't like ordinary beings who help their friends and harm their enemies, or who help someone when she's nice but not when she's in a bad mood. Rather, the Buddhas see beyond our superficial differences and weaknesses and have a constant, unbiased wish to help each of us. A Buddha's ability to help others isn't limited by selfishness or ignorance. However, a Buddha can't make someone act in a certain way, nor can the Buddhas counteract our karma. They can't erase the karmic imprints from our mind stream or prevent them from ripening. But Buddhas can guide us, inspire, and teach us. Just as the sun shines everywhere without discrimination or restriction, Buddhas help everyone equally. However, the sun's rays can't go into an upside-down pot. If the pot's on its side, a little light can go in, and if it's upturned, then the light floods into it. Similarly, according to our attitudes and actions, we have different levels of receptivity to the enlightening influence of the Buddhas. A Buddha helps effortlessly and spontaneously, but how much we receive depends on us. If we don't try to remedy our attachment, anger, and closed-mindedness, we'll prevent ourselves from receiving the inspiration of the Buddhas. However, the more we follow the path, the more our minds automatically open to receive the Buddha's inspiration and help. So we will come back to this again and again, but I just wanted to paint this extraordinary picture to inspire you of this is the possibility. So how do we get there? Through the Dharma jewel. So the Dharma jewel is the actual refuge. If we're going to pick one, Buddha, Dharma, or Sangha, it's going to be the Dharma. So we have the outer Dharma, which is the teachings, the texts, the sutras. But actually what they are records of wisdom. They're not the wisdom itself. So the actual Dharma is the wisdom in the mind of an Arya, the wisdom in the mind of a realized being. Everything else, all of this, this is the record of that wisdom, but it's not that wisdom. It helps us connect with that wisdom. And when we do, where is that wisdom? It's not in the book, it's in our mind, isn't it? So the Dharma actually means to hold. And it means to hold us back from suffering, to hold us back from acting negatively, from doing all the things that are going to bring disaster upon ourselves. It's also something worth holding on to, like a life raft. So, of course, the Buddha's teachings, the sutras. If you were here for the teachings on the Diamond Cutter Sutra, you would have noticed that it's mind-blowing. So then you need commentaries. So the commentaries also are really important. And in a way, any teachings with a spiritual purpose can help us. We can think of as the Dharma. So the Dharma, the lived experience, not just the record of the experience. The inner Dharma is our own wisdom, our own realizations, and our ability to distinguish right from wrong. So this one really struck me because a lot of the time I cannot tell right from wrong because I don't do things just because I want to be good or nice. I need to be convinced. Many times in my life, right and wrong hasn't been an obvious thing. Things are tricky in real life. What do you do? So if we have the Dharma, if we really understand the Dharma, this ability to distinguish right from wrong becomes clear. So we can then naturally develop our virtues, refrain from harm. The inner Dharma is our own practice of protecting ourselves and others, refraining from harm. And when this happens, then no external foe can harm us. If we've protected our own mind, doesn't matter how many insults someone yells at us, not only are we not going to be upset, but we're going to see clearly that they are a disturbed person who's suffering and cannot help themselves and are throwing all these weaponized words at me, and it's all just going to come back at them later on. And so our heart starts breaking for them. So that's the kind of protection we get from the Dharma. If you've ever tried to shut somebody up who's been yelling things at you, well, that never works. There's got to be another way. Okay, so Dharma refers to wisdom, the realizations that comprise the progressive stages of the path to enlightenment. The literal meaning in the Sanskrit term is to hold. It includes any method that holds or protects us from problems. Buddha's teachings are known as the Dharma because they come from his actual experience of eliminating every trace of confusion and negative energy from his mind. Refuge in Dharma means practicing the prescribed methods, aspiring to awaken within ourselves the wisdom that every enlightened being has discovered. So this comes from the Buddha's own experience. It's not just made up, a nice acronym, something to make money with. How many acronyms do you come across on YouTube? I'm shocked. This method and that method, and they've just like put it into ChatGTP to get an acronym. And I'm like, I'm not going to take refuge in that. I want someone who's had the experience and it's worked, and that if I applied it, I will have the same result. So the Dharma often is represented as an umbrella, the precious umbrella, because most of the time we're trying to stop the rain, aren't we? All we need is an umbrella. We can go anywhere. Rain, hail, shine, we're protected. Most of the time we're just pushing the raindrops back up into the sky. Then we have the Sangha jewel, the helpers. So the outer Sangha, actually the Sangha, the Arya Sangha, are all the beings who have realized the ultimate nature of reality. That's the real Sangha that we take refuge in, those who have already seen the nature of reality. We also have the Sangha that are the qualified guides, the lamas, the geshis with the qualifications, the monks and nuns. So the monks and nuns represent the Arya Sangha, but they are not the Arya Sangha because they may have as many problems as us, but they've taken vows, they're vow holders. So they're, you know, objects of inspiration and support. Also, sometimes we can think of the outer Sangha as our companions, our spiritual peers, those who support us, who help us. Some Buddhist traditions refer to the Sangha like as us. But His Holiness and many of the lamas have said that can be quite confusing, because normally when we say Sangha, we're referring to monks and nuns, and monks and nuns are vow holders. They're not lay people, so they don't have relationships. And so we want to be really clear with that, because there's too many funny business happening otherwise out in the crazy world out there. Who we take refuge in is the Arya Sangha. And this leads us to the inner Sangha, which is our own positive attitudes. It's like the inner company that we keep, that inner dialogue that's going on all the time in our mind. And our own determination, our altruistic attitude. And this means that we become Sangha for others. We become a support for others. We become actually able to help them. And because we have this positive company that we keep in our own mind, it's all the conducive conditions that's going to bring out the best of us. Comments, questions? But you've also got to remember, Amanda, we already put in an enormous amount of effort, don't we? to getting the stuff we want, to making people appreciate us. All of this stuff we put in so much effort, it's like misguided effort. If we put the same amount of effort into something that was going to actually give us a reward, actually bring us the peace that we want, we'd be so streets ahead.
Yeah.
But we put effort into things that aren't going to give us what we're seeking.
And there's habits.
Habits, that's right.
Years of habits.
Yeah.
It's really,
it's like when I gave up drinking, I mean, there's this, the urge, and I must say in the last few years, like in the COVID era, there were a few times where I just had this urge, I just want to go to the pub. And I felt this urge come up. But because there'd been a long enough gap between going to the pub, I could see it. Actually, it was an urge for refuge. It was just an urge to be free of suffering, just raw that. And what I'd done was I'd overlaid on top of it, a pub will do it. And once that's overlaid, now you're fixated on the pub and nothing will shake that. So you've got to get it before it happens.
Yeah.
So having this urge for refuge is nothing wrong with it. In fact, it's like an urge for Buddhahood or enlightenment. But we've got to put it in the right place. And, you know, there's nothing actually wrong with a pub. It's just that if that is your refuge all the time, it's going to backfire because it's not stable or reliable or consistent.
Yeah.
It's okay for a bit, sure. Well, yeah, that's right. Once there's the bad habit there, but the bad habit comes from all those overlays. And so part of overcoming a bad habit, it's not saying, no, don't do it. It's looking below it to where are you, what are you really seeking? Peace of mind. And now put the effort to seek peace of mind. See, Amanda, this is amazing because what you have right there is the fear and the faith. So you have, you know, the meeting where it's you were motivated by the fear of what happens if I continue on in this way, it's going to be terrible. And you have the company of everybody else to support you. And so that's one thing, and it's super important to have. We can't ever take our eyes off that. But the other one is we need to have something to strive for, the faith or the confidence and the inspiration. And so now here you are, part two of the meeting. Intermission on the motorbike in between. And yes, so what to actually aim for, because if we don't have an aim, we're going to lose steam. You know, because you can't get there through grind alone. No way, man. It's going to be back at the pub, thank you very much, sooner or later. So so the inner refuge is refuge in ourselves, in our ultimate potential. The three refuge objects have their internal counterparts. The inner Buddha is the seed of enlightenment that lies in the mind of every sentient being without exception. The inner Dharma is our natural wisdom that can distinguish real from false. The inner Sangha is the guidance and inspiration that we can give others. As human beings, we have the potential to develop unlimited love, compassion, and wisdom to free ourselves from all negative energy. In other words, to reach the same level as a Buddha. Well, you thought that was it, but wait, there's more. There's one other thing. So how do we put this into practice? In our life, it's by asking what's our goal. And so it's Julie, is it? Yes, this kind of comes to this. Is almost a progression. We can have, you know, what our goal is. Well, of course, we want no more suffering in this life. That's our unstated goal. Whatever happens, we don't want to go downhill, do we? We don't want things to get worse in our life at the minimum. We probably wouldn't be happy if they just stayed the same. We want things to go up a little bit. So whilst we're doing everything for at least no more suffering in this life, helping others, trying to become a good person, that's very good, but actually it's limited and we're not even on a spiritual path yet, because while we're just thinking of this life, it's not a spiritual path, it's a worldly path. Not denigrating a worldly path, but there's a limit there. The moment we start thinking, what happens after I die? What happens next? Then we're on a spiritual path. So there's a huge amount of questions that arise from that, but also a huge amount of answers. So it doesn't mean that everybody has to or wants to go on a spiritual path, but this I found quite shocking because most of the stuff that I've been motivated to do in my life, even Buddhist stuff, has just been for this life. It's just been because I've had a problem now. It hasn't actually been even on a spiritual path. It's only once you start looking at the big picture, the nature of my mind, what is life? What happened before? What happens after I die? Then you're on a spiritual path. So then it's, well, what can we aspire to? So the next stage is, well, in the future, at least nothing worse than this. Thanks.
Yes.
At the very least. So the minimum that we have to be thinking about is in the future, if I wake up in the next life, how am I going to make sure that it is at least as good as this or better? So a lot of that is about how to tame our mind. How can we even predict what mood we wake up in the morning? How we wake up in the morning? How can we tame our mind? So whether we wake up as an animal or whether we wake up as a cute little baby in a human life or whether we wake up as a Buddha, it's going to depend. But the moment that we're starting to think further than just this life, we're on a spiritual path. And that might be all that we can do, is that we just try and be a good person and hope for the best. Right? Okay, nothing wrong with it. We can look further though. We can think, well, what about complete liberation from cyclic existence? So this is often called nirvana. It's our individual aim. I don't want to keep coming back as an animal and then a human and then a god and then an animal and then a human and then a god, just like I don't want to keep having my life go round and round and round. Sometimes it's good and sometimes it's bad and I'm back to the beginning again.
Exhausting.
So is it possible to end this cyclic existence? And from a Buddhist point of view, yes, it is possible. We can have a complete cessation of all suffering, because if we remove the causes of suffering from our mind, suffering becomes impossible. So remove all of the causes, the disturbing attitudes, the assumptions and the, believing in false appearances and all sorts of things, then naturally we remove the causes of disturbances, then naturally our mind becomes peaceful. It's a natural result. So we remove ignorance and all the afflictive emotions, and that is nirvana, a state of peace. You can't fall back from that. Even if you wanted to, you couldn't, because the cause of agitation is gone. Even though there's no falling back from that, it may not be enough. Because I can tell a lot of you are thinking, what about everybody else? So that's where the universal goal comes. The idea or the wish for full enlightenment. So not just achieving a state of lasting peace for ourselves, but developing all of our qualities to their utmost so we can help others. So there's no kind of reason to develop all of our qualities from our own side, there's no point, but for others there is. So to become a fully enlightened Buddha, fully develop compassion, wisdom, skills and abilities. Why? To perfectly, spontaneously help everybody else. So when we're looking at our goal, the important thing is, I've noticed I just set limits without even knowing it. There's some invisible voice in my head that goes, oh, that's a bit much.
Yeah.
You know, can't be done, or this is enough, yeah, or I'm tired, or all these stupid things. But when you start investigating, have I put limits on what I can do? Yes. Where did those limitations come from? Habits, fear. society, YouTube, parents, bad friends, whatever. Have I investigated any of that? Well, I only just started listening to that voice that said, oh, there's a limit in here. Now I can at least start investigating. So with this, we can have, we might settle on one of these four naturally and go, yeah, this is the path that sits with me. Or you might go through all of these four different stages in one day. Or in your life. I think, I mean, even on a worldly level, we go through life pretty much with our own individual aims, and then if we end up with a family, now suddenly we take the others with us. It changes. So this is like taking that to its utmost. We're going along in our life. What's the most we can take from this life, and how we can most help others? And the thing about having a goal like this is it can't harm. If we have the biggest goal, we're going to get everything else in between. We're going to get the very minimum. But if we just settle at the very minimum, I hope it's not going to be too bad tomorrow. What is tomorrow going to be like? So courage, everybody. It takes courage. So the Mahayana path is about, oh, my battery's gone. Oh, I need a battery. I've only got, oh, no, the battery's gone. Time, gentlemen. Okay, so to summarize, we've covered a huge amount tonight. A valid refuge. How to tell if something's going to be worth putting our trust in, that will give us the result that we seek. How the three jewels give guidance and protection and reveal our inner potential. And this is actually what a Buddhist is, an inner being. So all of the external things and teachings lead us to this inner experience. And to have the courage for a big goal in life. And the biggest goal includes the happiness of all beings. And then our own happiness, of course, is assured. So I hope that you feel a little bit more confident now on a spiritual path and how to, the first steps, what the essence of the Buddha's teachings is about, becoming a Buddha.
Easy.
So we'll dedicate it. Are there any last questions or comments? Anything?
1 a.m.
Yeah, that's okay. So if you have questions at 1 a.m., write them down. Even if you never ask them, but it's great to have a record of those questions. It helps clarify.
Yeah,
Luke
just said real gems in there.
Oh, real gems. Excellent. So we will dedicate a moment. Next week we're going to look at what our default refuge is, what our inspiration is. Oh, sorry, during the week, look at what your default is, what you automatically go for refuge to, and then try and redirect it and look what really inspires you. Next week is great. We're going to have, the class is called We Are All Sick. And it's about how on earth do we apply the teachings in our life. Becoming our own therapist. Venerable Rabina led a talk called We Are All Sick. And a few people walked out at the beginning because they went, no, I'm not. And they were mortally offended off they went. So let's dedicate. So take a nice deep breath and let everything settle, everything that we've talked about, all of your questions, as drops of light raining down into your mind, illuminating your mind. Feel them absorb into you, that you can come back to all of these points again throughout the week. Access them again, start that inner dialogue. And dedicate your efforts for getting here, for staying online, that we can develop all of our potential to its utmost without putting any limits on it. And if we do that, then we will naturally be able to help all living beings out of suffering and into a lasting state of happiness as well. So thank you very much, everybody. There is, oh yeah, there is a handout. Hope to see you next week. Next exciting installment.